ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corbin Middlemass and Trent Copeland, back by popular demand in for Ed Cowan tonight. Stumps, day three of the Gabba Test match, and of course the ABC Cricket Podcast Monday and Fridays, and after every day's play right throughout the Ashes series. Great to see you, Copes.
Great to be back. It's been another whirlwind day. Every time I come onto this podcast, things are accelerating. Perth was unlike I'd ever seen before, but today, when we turned up to the ground, we thought there were moments yesterday where Australia missed a trick. Did they accelerate and miss a trick on putting a foot to the throat? Well, today was the day where, you know, I sit here with you now and it has the hallmarks of another 5-0.
Ooh.
And I hate to say it because I was so amped for Bazball head on with all the plans. Would it work against Australia, particularly in these first two test matches? It just seems to unravel in the space of 2 hours. First with a ball today, and they could not dismiss Mitchell Starc and Scott Boland, and then this evening with the ball. And it wasn't Mitchell Starc that tore them apart.
Both teams have done it in the test, but England especially, across two test matches now in 5 days of cricket, they get themselves in a winning position. They're on top. They've got a chance to try and drive home their advantage, and they hand it back. They invite the opposition back into the game, and just, it couldn't have gone better for Australia to basically bat through the better part of two sessions today. The tail wagged, 511 all out, Starc 77. Every player makes it to double digits. And all of a sudden, the 176 is a reasonable number, particularly under lights with a brand new ball. That's 177. And that's just to make Australia bat again.
Yeah.
And England are 6 for 134 at stumps. And it feels like, not to overstate it, feels like the series is over.
Yeah, rightly so. I go a little deeper into my nerdiness here. A couple of the things that we were looking at today. With the ball, when England were bowling to Scott Boland and Mitchell Starc, there was less than 30% of balls between 2 and 6 metres, so engaging the stumps. But there was also a chunk of balls, like over 50% of balls, not at bouncer length. So it was this bash it in territory where, in a lot of wickets in this country, is a good methodology to some of the more set batters around the country. But it wasn't the aggressive upstairs tactic with short leg, silly mid off at any point, really, other than a couple of overs. But it also wasn't pitch the ball up and hit the stumps. Like, is Scott Boland's forward defence good? Yes, it is. Is it good for 40 balls in a row with the odd bumper? That's what we didn't see there. And then the other stat that we heard today and we were looking into was batting second at the Gabba in test matches here. There's been 34 instances of teams that take a lead. They have never lost a lead.
Wow.
Never lost a test match. It was something like 24 wins, 8 draws and a tie. So Australia having the 177 run lead.
Yeah.
Formidable.
It's, and then the way it unfolded for England under lights, which we can drill down on. But I'm keen to tap a little bit more into the bowling tactics. And we spoke a bit about it with Ed last night. And he made the point that, that there's a tried and true formula to winning in Australia. And that is, obviously to get the batsmen driving. And Australia have done it to opposition teams for years. And if you look at the visiting sides that have had success out here, the South African unit with Steyn and Morkel and Flander and everyone else that's come out over the journey. And then even Jasper Bumrah. I mean, Bumrah is a pitch-it-up bowler, as sort of Ed alluded to last night, and yet for whatever reason, England have decided to go down this path. What is it? Is that a technical thing? Is it impatience? Why have they decided to go with this half-track bumper barrage with a 4-5 field?
Look, the answer is I think it's probably the bowlers that are bowling and what is our greatest skill set and should we back that in? And also the Travis Head, opening the batting wouldn't have been in their plans when they came out here, when they were thinking about how to do things. But just comparing apples with apples for a moment, Mitchell Starc and what he and whoever he's been opening the bowling with has done in this series compared to that first 4 overs England dished up yesterday, that was borderline embarrassing in terms of setting the tone. So to come back from that was really difficult. And Australia today, Mitchell Starc, he would be the first to admit today was not his best day with a new ball. But look where Australia are right now.
Yeah.
They have an ability to mesh mould together, adapt to conditions. Scott Boland, I thought, was excellent tonight. That was what we see from him in domestic cricket every time. Finding the top of the stumps, lateral movement, and when it did have the variable, like we saw with Ben Duckett, he strikes. So England have shown none of that, an ability to bounce back, wrestle momentum, and I reckon last time I was on with you in Perth, right arm bowlers between 132 and 140 k's an hour, Goff above that, but then comes back to that when there's no wickets.
Yeah.
They're all the same. And they one of the things that was just baffling was picking Will Jacks had to be a batting decision. Because they were on the ropes for 100 plus overs, most of the bowlers going in over five and over, and they did not turn to him until late.
But it makes you think too, like, why wouldn't they have just played Jacob Bethell? So if Bethel's a better batsman than Will Jackson, you're not picking him really as a bowler. It sort of felt like they didn't pick their next best spinner option, which was Shoaib Bashir, and they didn't pick their next best batsman, which was Jacob Bethell. They kind of picked this blanket that tried to cover both areas, but wasn't quite one or the other. And it, apart from taking one of the all-time great Ashes catches, it sort of feels a little bit like, and I'm sure he would almost be feeling that, you know, when are they going to throw me the ball? They never really did. And now essentially, what, job's on, mate? Can you try and rescue us from a, from the position they're in at stumps, where they're still 43 behind from making Australia bat again, and he's there with the skipper, and all of a sudden they're relying on him to try and pull something out of the fire, and it's a long way back for England.
Yeah, a long way back for England. And when you talk about Jacks, there was one of the balls that he bowled in his first over today that turned square and bounced. Alex Carey caught it up around shoulder height. First thing I thought to myself was, Australia going to win this test and win it handsomely, and no one will ask questions about Nathan Lyon not playing. But when I saw that ball, I thought to myself, Nathan Lyon would have been sitting in the dugout, turned around to George Bailey and said, mate, is there any greater evidence that you got this wrong than that?
Yeah, it was a strange decision from the Aussie selectors. It's a very unusual looking Australian team, and the fact that they've made 511 and the top scorer is the number 9 with 77, it's a weird looking scorecard. But yeah, Travis Head, who traditionally hasn't been the opener up the top, you've got the two wicket keepers in the middle and the four pace bowlers, first time in almost 14 years the Australians field that kind of a team. The night session, so Michael Neeser was able to make something happen. So Ollie Poper, I'm sure it's a dismissal he won't want to see. Spoons won back to the bowler. And in the end, England lost 5 for 44 to complete the night session. And it feels like it's, as I touched on, it's a long way back from here. They got it all to do, England.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to reflect on, and I think Ed spoke about this as well, Alex Carey's brilliance and his keeping up to the stumps to Michael Neeser. Many people will think, well, it can't be that hard. You know, you keep up spinners. So I love that there's been some glowing praise of Alex Carey's glove work in the last couple of days.
As a former keeper yourself,
exactly,
of course. Yes.
Speaking from experience on how bad I was up to the stumps and the broken fingers that ensued. I just want to talk about the caught and bowled elements that happened today. And Zach Crawley getting out in front of himself. We looked into some data with Hawkeye about how well Zach Crawley is playing down the ground, and when he's able to move out of his crease and hit the ball at the bounce or even at the top of the bounce when they go short, Alex Carey taking that away from him and coming up to the stumps, it has an impact, even if it's just on scoring and tempo. But today it had a tangible impact on two wickets. It meant that, like we saw at the end, Jamie Smith, who had been knocked over by beauty by Scott Boland, he was bowling so well that he had to start walking at him. As soon as that happens and Alex Carey is able to come up to the stumps, it means any ball that nips back and stays low, Scott Boland is completely in control. Neeser was completely in control. Just magnificent to have that in your armory. A keeper that at 135, 140 k's an hour.
Yeah.
This wicket is going up and down and lateral. Just brilliant.
Yeah, that's a great call out. And as much as it feels like we often focus when the keeper comes up on the medium, on the fast bowler, sort of the medium quick, thinking how would they feel with the keeper up or whatever, and that's a great way to explain it as to the extra dismissals that it almost brings into the game and what it makes the batsman do. Did it happen much to you in your career? Did you ever have keepers come up, and how did it make you feel as a bowler in that particular stage?
Oh, look, I reckon it's a blow to the ego, but it's not like I didn't have that blow beforehand. You know, it's not like I had 140 in the kit bag to regardless.
Is it something you call, or does the keeper call it? Does the captain call it?
I would say it's a combination of all of that. Very rarely would I call it, or in Nice's case today, talking to him after play, he was like, you know what, I just got to swallow the pride for a moment and realise there's a couple of different things I can try now because he's up to the stumps.
Mm.
So if you've got an ability to talk, you know, Brad Haddon used to do it for me at the SCG all the time on lower, slower wickets. And it just means that all the guys like Ed Cowan, who's here with you talking most of the time, get him to play back when I'm able to bat out of my crease to blokes that are medium pace.
Yeah.
It just takes away basically every motor dismissal bar me nicking one.
Yep.
So Alex Carey coming up, it just adds so much and largely is Steve Smith standing next to Alex Carey bouncing a few ideas off each other.
Yeah. It's amazing when you think about all the elements baked into this series so far. We are 5 days in. Feels like England's on the rack. And while we're talking about it in this kind of fashion where people are probably thinking, oh, but hang on, there's still 3 test matches to go. England could come back from there. They haven't won a single test match in Australia now if they take the L here in 17 tests. And that goes back 15 years. So it'll be a 17-test winless run in Australia, and they would need to win 3 in a row. Now, the other thing to keep in mind, there's only been one team, not in the Ashes history, in the history of Test cricket that's come from 2-0 down to win a series, and that was...
That had Bradman.
A team featuring Bradman back in 1936-37. And I know the Barmy Army have such an intense idolatry for Joe Root. He ain't Bradman. No one's Bradman. And so to think that you're 2-0 down in a series, you basically have to be a once-in-150-year team to think that England will be coming back from here. So there's a whole lot baked into that. With the fact that this is the centerpiece of the Bazball project. Every decision they've made for the last couple of years has been justified with, we're picking this guy or we're doing this with Australia in mind. That we're going there and we're picking a team, we're building our bank of fast bowlers, we're picking batsmen that we think are going to be good in Australian conditions and ignoring everything else with this as the end goal. 5 days into the series, Copes, and it could basically all be lost this early on.
If you're an England fan, I think, and even if you're Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes, the things that you would be pleased with is Zach Crawley gets a pair in Perth, but here he has shown that he has the tools and everything in his armoury, and it's now about decision making. He has been a good selection. I think he is well suited to these conditions. The Bashir one is the really glaringly obvious, particularly if Jax is coming in and not bowling today.
Yeah.
Bowled 9 overs or whatever it was. If Bashir is bowling that poorly, like finding some sort of solve for that is a must in Australia. And I know Australia didn't play a spinner, but it's one of those things where you sit back and you watch and they'll be judged by this. It's inevitable. Ashes series dictates so much in players' careers, their legacies. Joe Root scoring 100 has obviously been amazing. And funnily enough, when you cited that, how long they've gone without winning, it actually only clocked me in the face when I was talking to Joe Root's parents yesterday. And I was like, oh, have you been out to many Ashes series? They said, the only one we didn't come to was the COVID Ashes. Yeah. But be good to see him win because we've never seen him win.
Incredible.
So that is nuts. A guy, 13,000 test runs, 40 test hundreds.
4 Ashes tours, 16 test matches in Australia. And so as much as we talk about his 100 drought, he's never won one. Never won a single test. Not a series.
I shouldn't laugh.
Never been in the winning dressing room at the end of a test in Australia. And that hurts a legacy too, as much as the missing 100, which is he's now ticked that box. But for him and for Ben Stokes, as great a player as Ben Stokes has been, he's in the same boat. He's never won a test in Australia.
Absolutely. And look, we're being critical of England here, and it's a dour sight when you sit here at the Gabba and you're thinking about the prospects of the rest of the summer.
Mm.
But we have to say that, and you know that why it's so important to talk straight here is because there's no Cummins, there's no Hazelwood, no Lyon.
That's the other thing.
There's no Khawaja, who, when we came into this series, and whether you think that he should or shouldn't be now, this is not the team that was Australia's A game.
No.
And they are still thumping England. And that is the truth.
Yeah. I think if we said, hey, the Brisbane Test is about to finish and there's an Australian team that includes, you know, England, Nessa and Doggett all as part of it. And nothing against those guys. It's not as if they're not fine players. But they weren't part of the plan, and all of a sudden Australia's about to jump 2-0 up.
Yeah.
Something's gone wrong, it has, on the injury front, and yet Australia have been able to find a way through. It's been a weird test match, and Teddy spoke about this last night, where there were even moments yesterday where Australia had the chance to really drive home their advantage and didn't take it. And yet, as often happens when the dust settles, Australia's on top and England are a long way back. And that's where we sit at stumps on day three.
Yeah, and the catching is another indicator that's been a real difference between the two sides. So, look, I love this England team. I love watching them. A lot of the guys in that team, I love how they operate. Mm. Just as a cohesive unit at the moment, under the cosh, it's just not working.
I saw Pat Cummins interviewed today on the host broadcaster, and I was looking at him thinking, imagine what England's pondering at this stage, to think that this guy hasn't bowled a single ball yet. He's sitting there primed in the air conditioner. He's got another 8 days or whatever it is between test match. He will be absolutely frothing to get out there and get the opportunity to rip into this series. And he'll be waiting for England, who are 4 wickets away from going 2-0 down. They still need to score another 43 runs just to make the Aussies bat again. If you're doing the weather dance as an English cricket fan, the forecast for tomorrow is going to be hot. 90% humidity, 32 degrees, medium chance of showers, most likely in the evening with a possible afternoon thunderstorm. But that seems optimistic. It feels like there's going to be enough cricket for us to get a result with 2 days still to play. Anything I've missed, Copes, that you want to sneak in there before we depart?
Oh, probably only just the Nathan McSweeney double century for Australia A, the Sam Constis 100 in Sheffield Shield cricket. Just a few good signs from the scope around and the look around in this hunt for an opener that we've been talking about for 4 months.
Mm.
Some really good signs in that sort of next crop, post-Smith, post-Khawaja. Who have we got coming through? So great signs, 222 not out or something like that.
Massive score, isn't it? 88 for Conley and Australia A in a dominant position. England got rolled, the English Lions, for 166, and the Aussies are 7 for 554 at stumps on the second day of that fixture at AB Field. It's a massive score, isn't it? 500 by the first 11 here with the Australian Test team, and then 554 for Australia A at AB Field. Copes, appreciate your time and your insights as always. Thanks for dropping by and welcome back anytime.
Pleasure. Thanks, Corb.
This has been the ABC Cricket Podcast. Don't forget, you can catch all the latest news through the ABC website as well, the live blog, all your latest information and analysis. So don't forget to check that out through abc.net.au/sport. This has been the ABC Cricket Podcast. Don't forget, Monday and Friday, and after every day's play, right here through the ABC Listen app.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.